B-Pod Studios.
Now, sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Happy Monday. What's up?
Off to a great start.
Something's wrong with my board.
You sound great.
Do I?
Yeah, you're there. I mean, you got us, we got you.
Yeah. You sound ridiculously loud.
No, I'm going to hear. I'm going to turn it down a little. How's that?
It's either like an all or nothing proposition. No, it's not you. It's on my end.
Oh.
Yeah, it's something here. I don't know. We'll figure
it out. Did you try fiddling with the lever?
I did.
There's a board there, Nate. Little knobs on it. You could adjust all the settings.
Yeah, you can try one of those knobs or one of the. It's called a potentiometer or a pot for short. Try one of them slider pots.
Yeah, we'll figure that out at the first break.
Okay.
Some issues there for sure. All right. Patriots Hall of Fame announcement just happened.
Oh, yeah.
And Bill Parcells did not get in. Richard Seymour is the latest inductee into the Patriots Hall of Fame. Deserving, no doubt, so.
Yeah, I mean, and we were on our little conference call here before the show, and what I tell you, I said Seymour's going to get in. And it's – here's the problem with Parcells.
Did you know that, or were you speculating that based on what you think the fans
are
going to do?
I have not talked to anybody, but I just thought it was going to be very difficult for Bill Parcells to get in based on how it ended here. You know me. I think he should be in. Because culture changed here. Football changed here, and it became important. Football became an important thing here in the early 90s because Bill Parcells made it important, and he got the right kind of people, the right type of character guys to come in here and establish his kind of program, drafting guys like Bruschi, Ty Law, Curtis Martin, you name it. Let's go down a list of guys. But he wasn't here that long, and the way he departed, people will not forget that. And I understand why he's not in and why people did not vote him in.
Okay, the part about Parcells, and I saw a tweet from Bob Ryan over the weekend that I will bring up and read to you. But the part about Parcells changing the culture or making – first of all, did he change the culture? Of course. You know that better than anybody here, though, right?
Yeah.
But that's not to say that for, you know, 30-plus years of existence that the Patriots were that for all of their time.
I understand that, but
I mean, he brought
this
back from right. Probably, you know, a very rough – four-year stretch of the Patriots that was pretty bad. It was a pretty bad four-year stretch. But that wasn't the entire story of the New England Patriots prior to Bill Parcells.
I understand
and
that.
So the argument, and by the way, I've come around on this. I think he is important enough that he belongs in.
Yeah.
Even though I still think the way he left was disgraceful.
He introduced the team to Bill Belichick. If Bill Parcells is not here, Bill Belichick would have never been here in the 90s. Al Groh was our defensive coordinator. We had Romeo Crennel. We already had two defensive coordinators, so to speak. Then we brought Bill in, and he became the assistant head coach, but he really worked with the defense. I mean, trust me, he was in all our meetings. You know, I'm the one running the scout team. And that's where I think, you know, the Kraft family fell in love with Bill Belichick. And if Bill Parcells was not here, you wouldn't have seen Bill Belichick.
So Bob Ryan tweeted over the weekend, there is a fierce local debate over the Tunis candidacy for the fan vote Patriots Hall of Fame. Bill Parcells gave New England instant, desperately needed credibility. This is unarguable and non-negotiable. If a modern fan doesn't grasp that, then he or she should not be voting at all. And I would say, so wait, simply by getting hired, he belonged in? That's not a good argument for why he gets in. He got hired and gave them credibility, therefore he gets in. Well, then you could have voted him in the day he got hired. Or the first day that he coached a game. You can't base it just on that.
Do you know what his overall record?
That's not enough of a reason. He's like 500.
Yeah, it's 32-32, I think.
So, I think getting to a Super Bowl, though, should be the highlight of the resume there.
Sure. Took us to the Super Bowl. I mean, we had a losing record. Then we had a winning record. Then you lose in the playoffs to Cleveland, who Belichick was coaching. Then we went on a little bit of a run. And then Pete Carroll came in and was sort of that buffer between the two Bills. And, you know, inmates were running the asylum again. And that's the way it was prior to Bill getting here and then after he left.
Okay, so shouldn't it be about he spent 4 years, the record was not great, but by the end they were in a Super Bowl and it was all about establishing a program within a franchise. Shouldn't that be the argument? Not the fact that he got hired. He got hired. He was great. He gave them credibility they needed. Therefore, put him in. Well, that's a stupid argument. That's not enough.
Well, it's
you could have put him in on day one.
It's basically what he got in for the Pro Football Hall of Fame was because of his great career with the New York Giants and how they won those Super Bowls and what he did here, what he did in Miami, what he did in Dallas. He goes in and he turns programs over. You know, he's sort of a builder. He's almost like a house flipper. You know, Flipping Vegas. You ever watch that show, Hardy, out there with Scott and Amy?
Yeah.
We watch it because we're Scott and Amy at home, but, you know.
But I think this is, like, maybe part of the reason why the Patriots wouldn't be as, I guess, willing to, you know, to put Parcells in there is because even though he was good for the franchise and it was a culture change, blah, 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 a lot of the story and a lot of the narrative regarding Bill Parcells has a negative connotation to it with regard to the team. If you're going to talk about the reasons why he's in, you have to talk about the reasons why things were so bad prior to him being here. And it's not a great story. You understand what I'm saying?
Like sure.
From a celebrating the team perspective, the reasons for putting Bill Parcells into your Hall of Fame, you have to bring up a lot of stuff that's not as much fun to talk about when you're trying to have a, you know, look how great we are celebration. It doesn't all fit together nicely as it does when you're talking about inducting, you know, anybody post Parcells in the Tom Brady Super Bowl era. Really, you know? It's like it's a whole different vibe. Or you go back to an era that's like so long ago that it doesn't really matter. Oh, sure, there, you know, they didn't have a lot of, you know, winning years here or there, and you know there was only the one Super Bowl appearance there in the 80s. But you know it wasn't expected. Like it became expected post Belichick and Tom Brady. So I wonder if that factors into it. When they're looking at it from like a PR and a marketing standpoint, it's like, oh, God, are we really going to talk about all this? We're going to have to talk about all this stuff if we put Parcells in there. Do we want to talk about all this stuff at our Hall of Fame? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of things that don't actually have to do with success on the football field, right? There's all these sort of extra outside things. But I think a lot of what he did here was bring success in the way of establishing, you know, some sort of, call it a program, call it a system, call it something.
His personality, too. His personality is just so
organizational
huge.
Structure. Like, they got some of that. They got a real football coach.
Let me ask you this. Of the three, real quick, who would get the biggest crowd on that, you know, outside the hall there?
Richard Seymour.
I think it would be Seymour and Parcells. I think it'd be close.
I don't think it would be a great like a, you know, so we've seen some of these monster crowds before.
Yeah, players always trump coaches. They do.
Yeah, players always.
Yeah,
do.
I mean, fans love the players. They do. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the guy who, and I think it's obviously represented in how the fans voted. More fans voted for Richard Seymour than anyone else in the running, and I didn't expect Bill Parcells to get in. So I'm not surprised, but I think that's it. I think it's over. He's not going to get in unless there is someone who steps in. That would, I assume, would have to be Robert Kraft to say, you know, I'm breaking the rules or breaking what we do typically with the Patriots Hall of Fame, and I'm going to induct this person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't that what needs to now happen for this to happen in the near future? That's it. I don't think it's going to go back to a fan vote again. I think that part of it is over.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a tough thing because, you know, when you put somebody that's so historically behind certain generations, I think a lot of football fans, you look around that stadium, you know the age of them. I mean, it's the 20s, right? It's millennials. It's 20 to 45, somewhere in there. And some of those people really, Tom Morgan, who doesn't even know half the bands we talk about, doesn't recall any of Bill Parcells here. Yeah. So, you know, it's, I can understand, but Beetle, you got to pull that mic away just a little bit on that.
Is it coming in hot?
It's
on
coming
the, your nostril exhale. I didn't know if it was yours. I didn't know if it was yours.
Oh, I can't see. I can't hear it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Normally just, I'd be able to hear it.
Just yeah, pull it okay. away just a tad. That's
okay,
all.
Good.
Thank you. But I think people forget Parcells if you're of this young fan base, right? And you vote currently as to what you know.
And so it's not even an odd saying. It's like, oh, these kids don't know. I mean, let's face it. We're old. We're talking about an era.
Oh, no.
That goes back,
we're dating ourselves.
We're talking like, you know, yeah. We're talking 20 plus years ago now. So
yeah, yeah.
It's not, you know, dismissing young people who want to vote for Richard Seymour. I mean, what are we talking about here? We're talking about a guy who came to the team in 2001. It's not like they're voting for,
right.
You know, Gronk. they're still voting for a guy that joined the team almost 20 years ago. I can't really blame them for not being as invested in a guy who was, you know, here even before that. We're talking, you know, literally now more than a generation ago.
Right. You have to be at least in your late 20s to have any real recollection of when Seymour came into the league, right?
Well, how old do you have to be to really remember Bill Parcells as the coach of this team?
You've got to be at least in your mid-30s.
I would say 35 at a bare minimum.
Yeah, yes. I talk to young fans that they just forget, they just can't remember that Drew Bledsoe wore number 11. You know, everybody thinks it's Edelman. Edelman, and Edelman's been here for a while. And that's what you get trained to do as a fan after 9-10 years, man. That gap is huge. And that's another thing Parcells had to fight in this.
Even
as much as the way it departed for him. You know?
My one question is, so the senior committee for the Patriots, they have a senior selection committee, much like Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
If you've been retired for 25 years or more, you are eligible to be put in by the senior committee. I'm wondering if that is 25 years retired from the sport of football or 25 years removed from being associated with the Patriots. The word retired is used. So I think that'll be the only way. And a lot of the guys who have been in, I think, through the senior circuit have maybe been inducted posthumously. So you now get into that territory. And maybe it happens someday through the senior committee. But that's it. I think it's over.
Parcells is not
going to get in.
Greg Gilsanthos got in, too. You know, but that's different. You know, he's a broadcaster. When you're talking about actual football people, yeah, I could see him having to be slid in. And he just, you know, wonders it too late at that point. You know, where he could enjoy it. Or would he enjoy it.
617-779-0985 is the phone number. If you have any thoughts on Richard Seymour getting in. And you know what? Let's talk about that. We haven't talked about Richard Seymour actually getting in and how deserving he is of it.
Right.
Let's talk about him
a little bit.
Let's talk about who got in, not who didn't get in. And we'll get your calls coming up next here on Zolak and Bertrand.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Zoe and Bertrand.
All right, so Richard Seymour gets into the Hall of Fame, so.
Yep.
What's your reaction to hearing Richard Seymour get in the Hall of Fame?
Expected it. I thought he's the most deserving of the three.
So deserving.
Yeah, and name another guy that Bill has either, you know, cut, traded, dealt, whatever you want to call it, to where he went still play an extremely high level. Seymour's game even elevated when he went to the Raiders. And the, what you got in return for him was huge. You know, Mankins continued to play down in Tampa, but was he the same guy? Bledsoe, I think, went to a Pro Bowl after he went to Buffalo, but, you know, then he had to go to Dallas. You see what I'm saying? Deion Branch made his money out there in Seattle. He ended up getting that contract, came back, but Seymour played an extremely high level with the Raiders. He was dominant, still dominant.
Yeah, I think the system sort of helped him there, didn't it?
Yeah, he's more of that upfield, you know, push guy instead of, you know, take on the being a two-gap player, and, you know, you've got to swallow two guys while creating lanes for other guys to get to the quarterback. I'll never forget that press conference. We were doing fifth quarter, and somebody, like, made a snarky comment to Belichick. Well, Seymour, you know, looking at the numbers here, at some point you got to get some numbers from this guy. Didn't have a sack, didn't have a tackle. Those who watch a game, it's probably his best game as a Patriot because of how he attracts attention up front, you know, and just doing his job. And that's what they loved him for.
Yeah, I remember that. Game that was, but I know that
it was here. It was here.
It was made at the Hall of Fame committee meeting. Ron Borges talked about that at the Super Bowl, when everyone was at the Super Bowl and they were figuring out, you know, when they go into the meeting and spend the entire Saturday together. He referenced that game and referenced that comment from Bill Belichick. And Bill Belichick helped make the case and wrote a letter to the Pro Football Hall of Fame Selection Committee about why he believes Richard Seymour should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Here is what Bill Belichick wrote. He said, "Richard Seymour and Vince Wilfork are the two best defensive linemen I have coached, period." That's it. In Bill Belichick's mind, wow, Richard Seymour and Vince Wilfork are the two best defensive linemen he's ever coached. He said Richard had a rare combination of size, speed, strength, and athleticism. He was a smart player who understood the game plan and adjustments on the field. His length, strength, and quickness allowed him to match up on any offensive lineman favorably. So he could play any position on that line. Any position you put him anywhere, you play. He says, although primarily a defensive end in our 3-4 defense, Richard also played nose tackle. In the four-man line, Richard could play defensive end or defensive tackle, depending on the situation and desired matchups. His physical and mental versatility, as well as his ability to master multiple techniques, made him dominant as an inside or outside player. As an example of his skills as a complete football player, Richard was a force on field goal blocks for us early in his career, punt returns. He was effective against the run and pass in a variety of alignments. It is extremely uncommon to see a player of his size at any position be capable of doing so many things so well. In addition, Richard was a well-conditioned athlete with the Patriots. He had the stamina to compete for an entire 60-minute game. This is before all the sub packages came in and started dominating the games, though. This guy was out there a bunch.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah, you
don't
come
played
off the field. This guy affected the game because he never came off the field. But the way he was built, his structure, just his physical stature, man, thick, big, tree trunk
he
legs.
Was a beast.
It's like Julius Peppers, man. Those two guys, huge. You could kick them down inside. You could move them out. You probably could have stood him up off the end of the line of scrimmage there, if you really wanted to, you know, say overload your front. The guys they've had here too, Ty Warren, Jarvis Green, Vince, you know, you remember Bobby Hamilton was here for a while, Ted Washington.
Yeah.
Those were true 3-4 guys, and then 4-3, and then the defense shifted a little bit. But Seymour was as dominant a defensive lineman as I've seen. Yeah, I'm trying to think, you know, John Randall was just dominant too.
Oh, God,
I'm trying
John
to think
Randall.
Of guys when I played.
What a freak he was too.
Yeah. And Richard was nasty, man. Richard get pissed off and would play. And it was just
a good
combination to have him with Willie, man.
You know, if you take Tom Brady out of the argument, because it's like impossible to say, who's your favorite Patriot of the Bill Belichick era? You know, I think Tom Brady's going to be on everyone's list, right? Number one. I mean, he's clearly the best guy. After that, for me, it is Richard Seymour, number two. I have a personal bias.
Bill, in this Bill nailed that pick.
Such a fan of his and was just enamored with the stuff that guy could do. And be prepared, by the way, today, if Felger chooses to talk about it, for him to crap all over Richard Seymour, because he and I used to argue about this all the time about Richard Seymour, because Felger's too close to it. He was covering the team when Seymour left, and I think Seymour had a pretty crappy attitude toward the end here. Things had sort of soured. But I'm sorry, but that man's ability on the football field was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous, some of the stuff that guy would do.
And he's been around a lot lately. You know, he's come back for all these other inductions, and it just, he seems like a different guy. You know, you're out of the game. I think you appreciate things a little more. He's a hell of a poker player. If you ever follow him, watch him. He's on a World Series of Poker. It's nuts. It's nuts the amount of money he's won, you know, playing poker. But, I just think it's time. It's time for that guy to get in, because they don't have that type of defense that they had during that early dynasty run if he's not mixed in that front with McGinnis and those guys.
Oh, absolutely.
It's such a
huge component of the, you know, the early side of the run there that you have to, you know, pay tribute to it and there's so much that you can, you know, focus in on and give credit to, but to me you can't overappreciate the defense from the early part of the dynasty, and he's a huge component of it. It makes total sense. Right. I, the reason why we start talking about Bill Parcells is because that's the one you wonder, you know, if it's ever going to happen, you know, and right, why it hasn't happened by now. It is in no way, shape, or form a reflection of Seymour belonging there or not. Absolutely he does, I think. And like you said, Beetle, I'll be interested to hear another side of it, because I don't have that close connection to it about him leaving here. I was viewing that more as a fan. I thought, okay, it's a little odd, but you know, breakups are rarely feel good stories on both sides, and I didn't think anything of it at the time. But it wasn't just, you know, the moment when he left, but the time leading up to it. I'll be interested to hear a more insightful analysis on that, because I don't have it. I know the guy as you know, being an important component on the team on multiple championships.
Of three Super Bowl wins with great defenses on really all three of them.
And you look at the other guys who are in there with three rings, and it's like he belongs in there, you know, as much, if not more so, than some of the other guys. I mean, I'm not gonna make a case for him over any of the others, but when you look at the other guys in there with three rings already, it's Troy Brown, Teddy Bruschi, Kevin Faulk, Ty Law, Matt Le- I mean, yes.
Well, I'm not going to make the case that he's better than Ty Law, but I'll make the case that he's better than anybody else you just named.
Bruschi
was the perfect player, though, Beto. Don't forget, was the perfect player.
No, hey, you just named a whole bunch of really good football players.
Yeah.
I would say Richard Seymour is better than all of them, except I'm not going to make that about Ty Law. Ty Law was obviously deserving of being in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which is where he is now enshrined.
Right.
So I'm not going to say that.
There's only five of them during this run. It's Vinatieri, it's Gronkowski, Brady, and those two guys.
But I mean, if it was bad at the end, how do you take away what was accomplished while it was still good? You know, we're not
the guy was a man. You know why
he was
a man?
I don't think fans felt anything negative toward Seymour at the end. I don't recall that being the case.
Well, I thought it was Bill to make a decision between Seymour and Vince. From a money standpoint,
and
if you're going to go 3-4, you're going with the nose tackle. You know?
Yeah, and he went with a younger guy, and I don't think that anyone had any ill will toward the player. I mean, the only things that had really played out publicly were he did have a contract holdout, and then there was a dispute about going to a funeral, I remembered. So do you remember who that was?
His grandma. His grandma passed away.
And there was sort of a back and forth and a dispute about whether or not he could go to the funeral, which I believe he ultimately did end up going to.
He couldn't go, and I think that was about the same time Coach's dad died, too. And Bill went away. I think it upset Richard. I think there was something that went there. I can't remember exactly, but it showed you what a total stand-up guy Seymour was. After that 07 loss, the worst loss in franchise history, you know, the undefeated year, that locker room didn't open for a while, and that whole place cleared out. Not one player stood there and answered questions.
Yeah.
He was the only one.
At the end of the 03 season, December 7th, a defensive tackle, Richard Seymour's maternal grandfather, died. Seymour, who was close to his family and flies his family members to most Patriots games, received permission to go home to his native South Carolina for the Thursday funeral. Seymour missed Thursday's practice, but rather than fly home after the funeral, he remained in South Carolina Thursday night to be with his family. He flew back on Friday, apparently arriving at the stadium as the Patriots were finishing their afternoon practice. He remained at the stadium to lift weights and watch videotape of Thursday's practice, but before he left, he was told he would not be starting on Sunday against the Jaguars. Seymour said, quote, "I was shocked." who seemed on the verge of tears several times when discussing the incident Sunday after the Patriots' 27-13 win. I was disappointed. So he publicly said he was shocked and disappointed with Bill Belichick's decision. And that was, you know, that was the big dust-up. He didn't start in a game that weekend after going home to South Carolina. So other than that, and maybe at the end getting traded away, I don't think that fans had any issues with Richard Seymour. So no, Hardy, I don't think that was held against him at all. Anything that happened with him.
No, I'm not trying to get Felger or anyone else in trouble for something.
Oh, no. Felger can't stand him, though, for some reason. I don't know what it is, but he's got a thing against Richard Seymour. He never gives Seymour the proper credit. I'm already mentally preparing myself for that.
I don't remember that.
I'm going to tune in today.
I don't remember that.
I'm going to tune in today just to hear it, just to get pissed off today. I need that. I haven't been pissed off about anything sports-related in a while.
That's funny. I mean, I know Felger had his things with McGinnis and Dylan and those guys. I don't remember the Seymour stuff.
I don't know. I don't
think
it was anything
personal.
It was not personal. I just said he was too close because he covered the teams. So
like
obviously, when you do
that, stuff or
you see things, you hear things that fans on the outside
like a Randy Moss type, like a Randy Moss type of like,
not to that degree.
Care for him personally,
not to that degree. Some, you know, maybe something about, I don't know, not giving his best effort at the end. That's what I would say. Huh. Not putting in his best effort and holding some grudges against the coaching staff, etc. All of that. So, yeah, he better come through today because I'm looking to get angry about something. That's what I'm looking to do. We got to get that sports sort of that, you know,
get your
sports
fix.
Fever back, you know, get your fix, get your sports argument stuff back in the mix here.
Sports. I'm
trying to manufacture some of that right now. 617-779-0985. If you want a feel good, charitable story from the weekend, you need to look no further than David Portnoy and Barstool Sports. A very charitable individual he is. He is he's agreed to donate $250,000.
What a man.
Wow.
And hopefully he goes and is watching football with Roger Goodell this season. The details, we got to get to that. We love this story. Next.
Got an itch for sports talk while you work?
So just dropped his phone down his shirt.
You want to know why? He was using it to scratch his back.
Solak and Bertrand on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, TB. I don't know much about social media, but I do know about challenges. And I accept your all-in challenge. So I want to give 2 Super Bowl tickets on the 50-yard line, tickets to NFL Honors, and to come down with me for the Super Bowl presentation after the game. I hope this works as a great challenge for a great cause, and thanks for all you're doing. And I want to challenge in return Eric Stone Street and David Baker. Look forward to a great draft next week.
David Portnoy, El Prez, as he is affectionately known, leader of Barstool Sports. He celebrated on Twitter last night in a video, celebrating winning an auction to be with Roger Goodell and watch Monday Night Football in his basement. Paid more than $250,000, which is part of an effort to raise money for coronavirus-related charities.
Did he have corona, by the way?
I think he
was pretending he had corona, but he didn't have corona, but he was quarantined. But he's in New York. This is so typical Portnoy. This is great. This is great. You know he's going to show up with the T-shirt, right? The clown shirt.
Yeah. So what happens? How should Goodell handle this?
This is great for Goodell, too, because he put himself out there, the moron. Okay, all you had to do was say...
Wait, why is he a moron?
For saying,
to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars?
He could have given
someone into his basement?
We went over this with the tickets. He could give you any tickets he wants. You're going to NFL Honors. You're going to the Super Bowl, 50-yard line, whatever. Or to a suite. He could do whatever he wants. He's the league commissioner. You're going to invite some wacko in your house? I'm not saying Dave's wacko. Dave's good wacko. But he opens himself up to this, to the people like Portnoy, who will go out of their way and will not be denied, will not quit, will do what he has to do to get in this guy's house. And now he's going to get in his head. The commissioners had him removed from the last 3 Super Bowls. They find him in the stadium. He sits there with a hat on and a mustache, and they still find him. And they drag him out. What are they going to do, drag him out of his basement? stupid commissioner put his
house,
come sit with me in my house. Really? Would you really want some wacko fan in your house? I wouldn't. Hardy, would you?
So
he deserves
back
this.
To being a wacko fan.
He deserves Portnoy. Well, he deserves Portnoy. He does.
It depends how much you believe Portnoy is really a wacko fan and how much of it is for the story. And
it's
Dave always gives
it's
us a good
story.
Story.
Of course he
does. So if it's for the story, look, then they're both kind of in on it. I'm not saying that Portnoy has any particular love, respect, or admiration for Roger Goodell, but if Goodell recognizes it as being, yeah, this is at least in some part showbiz for Dave, why not try and not kill him with kindness, but kill the story with kindness?
Okay, you know, 3 hours together in his basement.
Right, yeah, right. You're right, Dave. It was egregious going after Tom Brady the way we did. You know what? We still believe that there was some shenanigans going on with the deflating of footballs, but what we did was wrong. Why don't you come over to the house? Thank you for the donation. Let's sit down. Let's watch some football.
Oh, be
you
the bigger
can,
man.
You can lay into me all you want, and you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to smile, and I'm going to serve you food and drinks in the process.
I'd give him pizza. I'd make him do a pizza review in my basement.
Well, here's the thing.
If you're Portnoy, if you want to do the show, if you want to keep it going, if you want to get, how long are you able to keep that going? It's like, this guy is being too nice. I can't do it anymore. What am I going to do?
Yeah, Goodell should not back out, is what I believe, number one. And I think people say,
can't. Well, he can't.
People, oh, it's obvious, you know, like, you know, and he shouldn't back out. But just because Goodell allows him to be there and says, yeah, let's do it, come on over, doesn't mean there's any right to, record the session. You know, I think we all think about it as like, what would that look like? Like, we're going to see it. Because with Barstool, you see everything, right?
That.
They tape it all.
Right.
I mean, they will turn the cameras on and we'll watch a game. And you'll sit there and watch them because some of their reactions are priceless.
Right.
But with this, they'll say, Dave, come on in. Check your cell phone at the door, by the way. You know, this is we want to enjoy each other's company. We're not going to
bury the damn hatchet.
Videotaping.
He's going to
take some pictures.
We'll
take some pictures, but come on over. Come on over and sit down. Let's watch the game together. You know, and do it. See what happens. I think it'd be funny if he actually does that and does what Hardy describes. Kills him with kindness. No, I'm not going to talk about the 11 of 12 footballs, but would you like me to top off that drink for you?
Here, Dave, have another sip. Here, Dave, hit this joint.
You know,
I get him high as a kite, making me pizza.
Right? But that's just, I don't know. I think it would be good. 250K. And by the way, on a bigger, like, serious story, the league needs to end their, I don't want to call it a war, but their standoff with Barstool Sports.
Don't they have to embrace it? Don't they?
Holy crap. I mean,
if
that silliness has gone on long enough.
We want to be somewhat of a partner with you. Wouldn't that be awesome? Like all of a sudden, all the signage at Radio Row, Barstool?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I think part of the appeal of Barstool is they're not on the inside. You know,
they
have to set
up
at some bar four blocks away from Radio Row. They're not like us. They're not the stiffs like the rest of the radio. That's part of their appeal. That's part of their image.
This is why.
The second they get legitimized by
the
Hardy, NFL and said, we know what you guys are doing. Come on in. That takes away part of
that lore.
Their mystique.
I would agree with you, I think the league is petty. I think the league is petty, and they really do want to ban David Portnoy in Barstool Sports. And when they stop being petty, I think they look better for it.
Yeah,
because they look ridiculous right now, even though what you're saying is absolutely true, that Barstool has gained by the NFL trying to shut them down or, you know, keep them out of things.
Absolutely.
or you can't come to Radio Row. Why? Why would you do that? Why would you block out a media entity, whether you believe it's mainstream or not, to come cover and be a part of your event when they have an incredible audience? That's just stupid, and it's petty, and you should get over it.
Yeah.
That's what it should come down to. And that's an audience
but
that the NFL wants to capture, if they haven't already.
I think the relationship works pretty well for both sides because Barstool still covers it. They're still covering the event, and whether they're trying to sneak into media night or whether they're just setting up for the week at a location nearby, they're still covering the Super Bowl, and they maintain their credibility as being outsiders. The NFL gets to save some face by not allowing them in and pretending to have some kind of standard.
Right.
I don't know that either side benefits from burying the hatchet.
They shouldn't want to go to the media party. Let all the fat slobs go.
I think what Portnoy did is
their fingers.
Yeah, I think what Portnoy did is hysterical. It's awesome that he ponied up that amount of money and he won the bid. Now what? But the leading up to it, I'm afraid might be better than what actually comes out of it. I don't want them to bury the hatchet. What fun is that? That's no fun.
You're right. You're totally right on this.
That, I mean, as a consumer,
he got arrested.
Yes,
he chained himself to the headquarters and got arrested.
If I were running sort of that element of the league, I would say, you know, you're welcome. If you don't want to come because you're outsiders, that's fine. But just know it's not because we're stopping you from coming over here.
I love the fact that the league, that they make the league nervous. I love the fact that they make the league this nervous.
What are they nervous about? I've never understood it.
They don't know. This is like it's guys with buttoned up shirts and earpieces and like, well, where's he at now? I don't know.
Right. Well, they look like a bunch of stiffs.
Call your stiff white guy friend, the old guy. He's very angry that this boy can't come in and they want to cause all these kind of problems. This is great. Hardy's right. Keep it going.
Dave Portnoy around, like chasing him around the Super Bowl to get him out of there for what?
Yeah, they get five
guys. The man's watching
Portnoy,
a football game,
out, and all he's doing is just
crazy.
He goes limp to make them carry him out. He doesn't even help him. It's great.
Like,
but
what are you doing?
Going over to Goodell's basement? Like, how do you pay this off? This is like the setup to the joke, The Aristocrats. You guys know the joke, The Aristocrats, where it's the setup is the funny part, and the longer and dirtier and crazier the setup is, and the punchline is always the same. You know, like the punchline is actually a letdown after this great setup. I don't know how there isn't a letdown at the end of this, unless the NFL somehow puts the kibosh on it and says, no, we didn't know it was Dave Portnoy, we're not going to allow it. Okay, now you got a good punchline that's as good as the setup. But if he goes in there and they actually sit down and talk about it, and there isn't World War III as a result, I don't know. I don't know how the punchline of this like long
right.
setup joke is going to be better than the setup.
Yeah, you're
it's
right.
almost like
you're
it's
totally
almost like
right.
the security. You know, there's going to be
it's
security
such a
there. Right?
It's such a great setup. Portnoy won the auction. It's a great setup. How do you pay this off? I don't
well,
know.
Kevin emailed in and said the best thing that Goodell could do would be show up, and if Goodell opens the door and he's wearing the clown shirt.
No. Goodell has to have one of those awful blue button-up shirts with a white T-shirt underneath and slacks and just be himself. He shows up with the T-shirt. It kills it. Hardy's right here. It kills it. I don't want any grab ass.
Is he gonna spit on him? Remember that was it. That was his thing.
God,
he was gonna
that's right.
spit on Goodell. If you ever saw him, I mean, what happens now?
I don't know. But it should.
You
be
wonder if, I wonder if this know. Messes with Dave's head now. Yeah.
Goodell and him need to set a date. They need to set the date. Figure out which game it's going to be. The 617-779-0985. We had some celebrity deaths over the weekend. The weekend death segment is next.
Consider them part of your benefits package.
That was the dumbest 30 seconds we've ever had on this show.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it. You, Kroger, my son tells me your company stinks.
Oh, God.
What? We'll get yours in a minute. Kroger, you couldn't smooth a silk sheet if you had a hot date with a babe. I lost my train of thought. And now, as Festivus rolls on, we come to the feats of strength.
Not the feats of strength.
Until you pin me, George, Festivus is not over.
Oh, please, somebody stop this.
Let's rumble!
Three celebrity deaths over the weekend. That one, Jerry Stiller, obviously. We lost Roy from Siegfried and Roy, Roy Horn. He died of COVID-19.
He's already half dead, though.
Well, and, yeah, but it's important to note, Beetle, he had the pre-existing condition of having half of his throat ripped out by a tiger. So that counts as a pre-existing condition. What?
Do you have to get a rabies shot after that?
I would hope so.
I would imagine a tetanus.
Isn't a rabies shot? Are rabies shots like a series of like a bunch of shots?
Yeah, 12 in the stomach.
Oh, God. I thought they do it in like the legs too. Nope. Isn't there like elements of the legs?
They stick it right in the
stomach. That's what they used to tell us when we were kids. I don't know if it's this. I can't imagine that it's the same horror story when we got when we were kids, but I still think it's kind of unpleasant the number of rabies shots you have to get.
Yeah. Ugh, yeah. That's one thing you don't want. You don't want the rabies. So Roy, Jerry Stiller, and also Little Richard. Those are the three from over the weekend. Any of those have you shook, Zoe?
No, but I mean, you listen to all the people and you read the stuff on Little Richard, how much he impacted rock and roll. Like, he had such a flamboyant personality for the time of when his music came out and how much his music actually holds up. Like, you heard that, just come on right there. I'm like, okay, I could sit there in the car and listen to this. What else did he sing, Hardy? It's good hits.
Who, Little Richard?
Yeah.
That was Tutti Frutti.
Tutti Frutti was a big one.
Well, I think that was probably the one that he's best known for. Long Tall Sally was the one that I think other rock and rollers looked to and said that was probably the one that influenced them as much as anything. But it was his style, it was his mannerisms, and you know he was also one of the black artists, you know, early on in rock and roll. That immediately white artists said, here, let me take this and make this song a little more palatable for, you know, good, wholesome America. And it was shameful, you know, what was done to him and other artists at the time. Hell, and he made a big deal of it at his Lifetime Achievement Award at the Grammys, where he stood up there on stage. He said, y'all never gave me no Grammy before. Like, no. This doesn't mean everything's fine and good. Now, he was in the first class to get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So at least they recognized him as soon as they could. But that was 1986. And, you know, he had been making music for 30 years already.
Jesus.
Which is why he was, you know, eligible to go in with that first class of inductees.
Yeah.
But, man, you go back and look at that now. Like, you know, watch some of his videos, as I'm sure we all did over the weekend. Some of the his mannerisms and some of the, you know, like his look and the way he did it, it would raise a few eyebrows now. Can you imagine what it was like when he was coming into homes in, like, you know, the Happy Days era, 1950s and 60s America? Holy crap. I mean, to me, that's what, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame should be about. If it's not going to be, you know, quote unquote rock and roll, like right. we think of it today, it should at least be somebody who personifies, you know, the rebellious nature of it. Man, he did. I mean, he was his own guy, and he did not care about convention or about making people feel. It was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The music was great, and people dug it, but man, did he make people upset. And that should be what rock and roll is about. And there's too many people getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now who are the farthest thing from controversial or upsetting. They are as mainstream and as, you know, all-encompassing and widely accepted as it gets. And that's not what it should be. Little Richard belongs in there. And I mean, it's cool that he got some accolades later in life, but it was the influence. And I didn't know about a lot of it until I heard people talking about it over the weekend. But the number of other musicians who came out and said, oh, yeah, it was Little Richard. Elton John was one. He's like, other guys could play the piano better, but Little Richard, like, attacked that piano. And Elton John said, that's what I did. You know, just be a banger. Just, you know, go after that thing. Play it like almost like a percussion instrument as opposed to, you know, this delicate, you know, collection of ivory. And that's what was cool about it. That's what made it rock and roll. It was kind of, you know, it was physical. It was kind of violent. It was a little dangerous.
Yeah, and the actual rockers, today's rockers, recognize him. And, you know, most don't take the time to do it, but they're like, wow, he really impacted their careers. But is Jerry Stiller related to Ben Stiller?
Yeah, it's his dad.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's right. They do look alike. Especially meet the
you really didn't know that?
Fuckers. You go to
I'm surprised
fuckers.
You didn't know that.
Like, oh my God, like that little kid, remember the one Jorge that they thought they pulled the hair
yeah,
out?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That could be his grandson. Oh my God.
But that was a movie. And
I did not, I swear to God, I did not know they were related.
Yeah. Well, now you do.
You get two popular acts. Well, I guess, yeah, Martin Sheen, Charlie Sheen. I guess, yeah.
Yeah, Martin Sheen, Charlie Sheen, and his brother Emilio Estevez.
Oh my God. They're not brothers.
So I imagine Tom Morgan has 15 Jerry Stiller drops ready to go from Seinfeld. I would expect nothing less from him. Did you put together any, Tom? Do you have any that jumped right out
well,
to you?
Well, he played the like 2-minute version of Festivus here to start
the
segment.
How long does it take to find a bra?
What's going on in there?
You ask me to get a pair of underwear, I'm back in 2 seconds. You know about the cup sizes and all? They have different cups.
Yeah, I know about the cups.
You got the A, the C, the D. That's the biggest.
I know the D is the biggest. I based my whole life on knowing that the D is the biggest.
So weird. Some of those Seinfeld episodes with him. They're just.
He played that role great.
We're in the man's ear, him and Kramer, like dancing around, shooting pool. The bro.
What the hell did you trade JP in for? He had 30 home runs and over 100 RBIs last year. He's got a rocket for an arm. You don't know what the hell you're doing.
So that's
when Steinbrenner came over to tell him that George was dead, and he's like, "I'm very sorry, your son. We think he's been the victim of a foul play. What the hell did you trade Jay Buna for?"
All right, 90 seconds, no commercials. Here are the headlines. We're right back.